Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige Vanderbeck, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and truly modern witchcraft. Hey everyone, I am so psyched to be back, and thanks for joining me for the first episode of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast for 2022. Very excited. If you're new here, my name is Paige Vanderbeck, and I am your host, as you might have heard in my intro. Nice to meet you. I have had an absolutely wacky year, and it's only February. Just a lot of things all coming at me right at one time, right? I had a lot of issues with my apartment and my landlord. I ended up getting on the radio, and lots of changes are being made around my building, so that's cool, but also it took a lot of energy. And then my little alley cat needed expensive surgery yet again. She nearly died. And so many of you came through, donated money to the GoFundMe, or shared the link, and people in my regular life did as well. An old friend from high school lent me $2,000. And like, she was so comfortable. She's like, oh, I know you'll get me back. And I can't imagine just letting your cat die. How fabulous is that? So it's been kind of a wild ride, but and a little bit scary. But it wasn't all bad. Amidst all of that kind of wacky stuff, I have been writing a book. Yeah, I've been writing a book. So I can't give you too many details. But a book will be coming out later this year, probably in the summertime. So today, I will actually be sneaking a few things from the new book into the episode. This is because for the last, I don't know how many months, I have been reading, writing, you know, eating, breathing, sleeping a particular topic. And it's, you know, kind of regular offshoot topics. So it's all very fresh in my mind. So today, what I'm talking about is creativity in magical practice, and of course, ways to magically influence your creative expression. I like to look at it from both angles, right? Magic creates things, and things create magic. It's just the way of the world. So creativity, like as an energy, as an emotion, as a whatever, is the engine that powers pretty much everything I do. Not only do I kind of need to do things in a creative way, but I love everything to do with creativity. I love art, artistry of all kinds. I love watching people build things. I love buildings themselves, architecture. I love historical buildings. I go for walks and just look at houses. I love innovation and discovery, you know, really wild new ideas that no one's come up with, or finding new things in the world because someone came up with a wacky place to look. I love design. I love creation in general. And I find that the creative energy that I you know, build up, that I raise while I'm designing and planning a spell with lots of physical elements, that's some of the strongest energy I have for making magic. You know, when I'm really just creating it from the ground up, I always feel like I'm putting a lot more into it, and therefore I will be getting a lot more out of it. This is what I really love about magic that uses lots of stuff. You know, like ingredients, curios, you know, bodily concerns, items, crystals, methods, whatever. I love this stuff. You don't always need this stuff. And I've talked a lot about magic that uses no stuff. Today we're going to use some stuff, or we're going to talk about the stuff, I guess, is more appropriate. I like spells that give you something to hold on to after, like maybe a charm bag or something. I love doing any sort of magical activity that gets my hands dirty in the process. You know, like maybe that's literal, where I have oils and herbs and wax and stuff all over my hands. And other times it's really when I'm just right in there from inception to the end of the spell, to when I release it. I really think of my spells as a kind of art. You know, it almost feels like painting a picture. You know, I have this image in my mind in the beginning, and I create it somehow. I bring it to the real world. And in general, when I start to put it in those terms, art and magic just have so, so much in common. Art and magic, they can both help you express your feelings in a really healthy and empowering way. Even negative feelings, even scary feelings, even feelings you never want to share with another person. You can get those out, you can express them, and maybe you can find some understanding. Magic helps you accomplish your goals, and it makes your dreams come true. Art can do that too. And with art, you can literally bring the things you see in a dream, the dream world, a magical place, into this one. You can sculpt an image from your dreams. That's incredible. These all come from kind of the same thread, don't they? Both crafting and spell crafting, super fun, I'm really proud of that one, are incredibly personal and unique. So you can color in the lines and paint by numbers, or you can start with a blank canvas and just come up with something totally original. Just pull it directly from your mind's eye. Either way, no two people will come up with the exact same creation. Though it isn't necessarily true of all art or all magic, I really love the visual and the aesthetic things that I can create. I love looking at things, for lack of a better way of saying it. A beautiful spell and a beautiful painting are both incredibly creative and expressive to create. And then I can share them if I want. I can experiment with color and composition. I can look at it from all different angles. I can use my imagination, which to me is the same as magical visualization. Visualization, imagination, they are the same thing. My third eye is well used in both art and magic. And on that note, I mean both magic and art can technically be created without any physical items at all. Music, dance, poetry, these are all art, and they can all be magical, just like meditation, chanting, and visualization. The most significant thing that art and magic have in common, though, is intention. Both magic and art, they're a form of communication. They ask you to focus on a specific intention and to express it through your craft. With art, the intention can be a matter of what you want whatever you're creating to say, what you want other people to feel when they look at it or touch it or experience it. In magic, your intention is often a matter of what you want to change, what you want to manifest, what you want to make real. But either way, you pour that intention into it by focusing all of your energy on it for however long it takes. That expression, that is a little bit gross sounding, but the idea that you pour your blood, sweat, and tears into something, often people imagine physical labor when we use that expression, because it's just a very easy connection to make. But the idea behind that actual expression is that you've put a lot of yourself into something, so much of yourself that it carries that piece of yourself out into the world with it. And that is what both art and magic do. So while arts and handicrafts and things like that are the areas with which we most associate creativity and creative energy, that's not the limit for creative energy. In fact, there are a lot of creative people out there who are not interested in art they feel they have no artistic talent, and that makes them think they're not creative people or that they're less creative than others. And I absolutely have to correct you, because that is completely false. You do not have to be. Creativity doesn't have to be artistic specifically. Creativity is creation. It's the energy of creation, and sometimes it's also the energy of ingenuity and innovation. It's about seeing different paths, even where one is well-worn. It's an energy that can be used to create artistic works, or to find a new way to organize a spreadsheet, even place furniture in your home. These all take creativity. Many of you use a lot of creative energy in the morning when you get dressed or put on makeup. Others get creative in the kitchen. They mix different flavors and textures to elicit, a certain, I hate the expression mouthfeel, but to elicit a certain response from people. Everyone can be creative. Everyone has creative tendencies, creative strengths, and creative weaknesses. Artistic people are not necessarily more creative than you. They might be more artistic, but those aren't the same thing. One group of people that maybe many don't immediately connect with creativity is people with ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I was diagnosed with ADHD back in October 2021, so not too long ago. Huge surprise. I didn't see it coming at all. But suddenly, you know, a whole lot of stuff about me made a lot more sense. And not just to me, but to others around me, of course. You can kind of see this recognition when I tell people that have known me for a very long time. They're like, ah, that explains a lot. So one of these things that has always, it's both a blessing and a curse, right, is my tendency to think creatively. And it's not actually just a tendency. It's actually a very serious need to have a creative outlet, especially at my job. Every job I've had has started out, you know, it's fine, it's great. It's also new. My days are filled with learning and discovery. I'm meeting new people. I'm figuring out how to do new things. But when you're working in a drive-thru or at a cash register like I was, after a very short amount of time, all of that novelty fades away and it becomes routine, but in the worst possible way. It's death, okay? It's just death. And I feel comfortable being a little extra about it now because it's death. And and I just couldn't do it. I could never, ever do it. After a few months, my ability to do my job would always wane if there weren't some creative ways for me to be of service in that job, which there rarely are at all if you make any sort of minimum wage. Very disappointing. This wasn't simply a quirk or something that I wanted. Because of ADHD, this was something that I literally need to make my brain work. I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about ADHD, although it is incredibly interesting. But I had no idea what it really was or how it worked until a few months ago. And it's really obvious to me that other people don't know much about it either. The things we learn about people with ADHD they're very limited. Actually, the things you can learn about yourself with ADHD are still pretty limited. But here's kind of a quick, simplified rundown of how it works. So ADHD is a neurological disorder. Or to put it another way, people with the condition are neurodivergent, meaning their brain just it just functions in a very different way than what we consider maybe status quo. Autism spectrum disorder is, of course, a different kind of neurodivergence. This is the one most people think of when they hear the word. And because there is a lot of overlap in the kind of effects it can have on a person, though not in causes, often you can learn a lot about one by understanding more about the other. Also, people on the autism spectrum are much more likely to have ADHD than the general population, and vice versa. Sometimes it's really obvious to others that someone has ADHD or maybe on the spectrum, you know, and sometimes it's just not so obvious at all. Sometimes it can stay hidden until you're 35 years old or older. In either case, women have a much harder time being diagnosed and finding treatment, even though, you know, there's no research or anything that suggests that these disorders are actually more common in boys and men. That's just what they believe, because it's always been taken more seriously in men and boys than it is in women, girls, and non-binary or trans individuals. Ain't that about a bitch? Really, really frustrating. When it is obvious that there is a neurodivergence there, it's usually just the negative traits that are obvious to others. Things like an inability to sit still, or to wait your turn, or to slow down, or to stop talking so fast, to stop rambling. ADHD can be incredibly disruptive at school when you're young, right? Because they just learn differently than others, these kids. And so what we see is a kid that can't fit in, that can't function the same way as other kids, and that maybe can't handle, you know, school or life, however someone chooses to see it. But what people don't really understand about it is that it's a disorder that focuses mainly on pleasure and on mental stimulation. I wrote about it on my blog if you guys want to check it out a little bit. So everyone produces chemicals in their brain that regulate emotions, and they interact with different, you know, neurotransmitters and activate different brain waves and different parts of the brain. It's a whole thing. That's how what happiness is, neurologically speaking. And also, neurologically speaking, comma, extremely paraphrased and explained by someone who's not a neurologist, just adds up, in case you didn't know that about me. Dopamine is what we consider kind of the main happiness chemical, and people with ADHD do not produce it in the same amounts or as a result of the same stimuli as other people do. In fact, your brain, if you don't have ADHD, your brain produces more dopamine than mine does at a resting state. Dopamine doesn't just make us happy. The areas of the brain it interacts with also regulate your motivation, your ability to learn, remember, and understand things, and what's called your creative cognition. People with ADHD are extremely creative, like exceedingly creative. And without a creative outlet, sometimes their brain, it just doesn't produce the chemicals we need to feel motivated, to prioritize things that don't offer some kind of immediate, like, pleasurable reward, or to understand things that don't really grab our interest. None of that's a choice. When you feel motivated to do something, even something you hate, it's because the chemicals in your brain are creating that based on whatever it is that you're thinking of. Work is a great example, especially for me, because I've always had trouble. Other people can just think about the fact that they don't like their job, go to their job anyway, do it, and be perfectly happy that in 2 weeks' time or whatever, they will get a paycheck. All of that makes perfect sense to their brain. But for me, when I don't like my job, it becomes nearly impossible for me to actually do it, for me to feel motivated to do anything associated with it, because my brain is just not... it's just not firing that way. It's just not doing that thing. It's a real problem, right? It can be a very real problem. But the upside, there's a really fun upside to that, is that things that do produce dopamine tend to produce a little extra in me and people with my, you know, similar brain. We can actually get a little bit more enjoyment out of something than the average person. Even if we like it the amount, the same, you know, objectively, we like it the same amount. This is another thing that explains a lot about me, because I cannot tell you how many problems I've had with friends because they hate the way that I like things, like the way that I enjoy them. They seem to resent my level of enjoyment and are always saying, like, you're a bigger fan than I am. I'm like, I'm literally not any bigger. This is just, I just do it differently. They always think I'm going overboard on purpose or whatever. Anyways. What this all distills down to is that people with ADHD are very driven by emotion, and creativity is an incredibly emotional energy. Okay, I said I wouldn't go on and on about ADHD. My bad. Honestly, it's like so much more interesting than I ever realized. I've become slightly obsessed with brains, so forgive me. The positives with ADHD are numerous, beyond the ability to be creative, but they're not really seen as important in society. There are many different types of intelligence. You know, you can be emotionally intelligent, you can be intelligent with people, you can be intelligent with math, you can be intelligent with art or creative pursuits or whatever. But in society, the types of intelligence that are valued the highest are math and logic-based intelligence. Those really seem to matter more than all the other ones, even though they don't. That is a false association we've created. That's not true. In fact, Thomas Edison sucked at math. Terrible at math. Tell me he's not, like, an important, intelligent, innovative, you know, figure in history. So, one of the positives, one of the things that is... you know, working in a very positive way when you have ADHD, is that creative cognition. So this is a lot more than artistic talent or even appreciation of arts and crafts and things. This is a neurological process in every single brain, all of us. And it allows us to problem solve, to create new things, to innovate, to have different ideas, and to push past intellectual and logical limitations. Something everyone does. People with ADHD are just a little bit more. They just got a little more of that going on. And something that we're very good at within that kind of realm is called divergent thinking, meaning that we can come up with many ideas from a single starting point. We can think of a lot of things that a lot of people just wouldn't be able to come up with at all. That's creativity and vision. Those are very positive qualities. To see the world from a creative standpoint is to look around and to see possibilities or solutions, connections, meaning pretty much everywhere. Suddenly my interest in astrology makes a lot of sense. You do this too. You know, you may not think you are an outrageously creative person or whatever, and whether or not you have ADHD, you use this energy. You might use it to work in finance or medicine or, I don't know, man. What is a job that people think is not creative? Playing a sport, being an accountant, data entry, whatever it is you do. Or you may use it to create art. You know, neither is more or less real than the other. You know, all versions of creativity, just like all these different versions of intelligence, are valuable and are useful and are part of being human. So that's creativity from an intellectual or you know, thought-based kind of paradigm. Let's talk about what it means in terms of magic. Creative energy in magic is aligned with the element of fire, though all elements come into play. I know this because some of you are already mentally arguing with me and telling me that earth is the element of creation. Of course it is. They all are. Mm-hmm. But fire is the one that is, like, official. And the type of fire energy it is solar fire energy. I often think that there's a big difference between solar fire element energy and, like, the fire of a candle or a bonfire. They just have kind of a different vibe to me. And I mean, it makes sense that the sun is kind of associated with our creative energy because the sun makes things grow. And without its heat and its light, no living things ever would have come to being on this planet. Also, we often imagine ideas, you know, as a little light bulb lighting up over our heads. Light and illumination, these are symbols of creative thinking and of intelligence. This is, of course, the meaning behind words like enlightenment, being able to see the world from a spiritual perspective, one that may be invisible to others. It's also where the Illuminati got their name. In the tarot, the suit of wands, which is the fire element suit, is the suit most associated with creativity. Many of the cards point to creative solutions to problems, they reference creative projects, that kind of thing. Another type of energy that is very, very tied to creativity is passion. That makes sense, right? You're passionate about something, so you look for ways to express that, and creativity is a way to express your passion. This is why many of the wands cards also have to do with sexual expression, because again, there's just this very common thread that unites them. In your birth chart, a good indicator about how you express and experience creativity is your sun sign or your main zodiac sign, but it really appears everywhere, all over that chart. You should look beyond the sun sign at everything else. You should even look beyond your planetary signs in general to houses and aspects and all those advanced type astrological concepts. You may need a professional for that. For those of us who aren't at that level, you can also look at the moon in your chart, which is emotions and emotional expression. Venus is how we perceive and understand beauty and value, and Neptune is the planet of our imagination. Uranus is the planet of innovation, shaking shit up, new ideas, making changes, revolution. If you like to create physically, you know, getting your hands dirty, you could also look at Mars, which is the fiery planet of passion and of physical activity. If you're very inspired by spirituality and a quest for knowledge, Jupiter is another place where you can look. There is no sign or planetary position in your chart that is going to say that you have a complete lack of creativity. There just isn't. If you don't see a lot of fire signs in your chart, that means absolutely nothing. Kurt Cobain, the singer from Nirvana, was incredibly creative, and he was a big old ball of water signs, you know, right on the opposite end of the spectrum there. Of course, the main water sign, he's got it everywhere, is Pisces, which is ruled by Neptune, that imagination planet. Some people see certain signs as completely non-creative, especially Earth signs. This is total crap. Not just saying that because I'm an Earth sign. Even a Virgo can get creative and find new and weird solutions to problems. I know that sounds unusual, but I promise it can happen. Capricorn? Listen, if I'm not enough evidence that Capricorns are creative, I need you to just consider for a moment David Bowie, Rod Serling, the creator of The Twilight Zone, and Henri Matisse, the famous French painter. He was also a sculptor and a printmaker. You know, he was legendary. His methods are still very famous. He was also friends with Picasso, a Scorpio. And Matisse was really innovative in his use of like super vibrant colors. That's so my vibe. If that's not impressive to you witches, a Capricorn cartoonist named Charles Adams created the super goth family of the same name that we all know and love. Okay, that might have been a little off topic. You know, I get kind of defensive about people telling Capricorns they're not creative and should relegate themselves to the realms of, you know, finance or business or something they consider completely the opposite. Stephen Hawking, Isaac Newton, and George Washington Carver were all Capricorns. Then again, so was Madame C.J. Walker, the first female self-made American millionaire. Jeff Bezos is a Capricorn too, but he's icky and we don't want him. So take it from me, Capricorns, there is plenty of space for you to get fucking weird, and I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. Creative energy and magical energy to me, I mean, you might as well be talking about the exact same thing. Witchcraft is an incredibly creative practice for me, even when I'm not, you know, like writing books or podcast episodes or something like that. When I'm just by myself, every spell I cast is a work of art. And most works of art I create are also spells. Sometimes that's intentional, and sometimes it isn't. An intentionally creative spell is something like a candle spell. You know, I narrow down my attention, what I want to create with magic. Then I choose a color that expresses that. I pick oils and herbs that align with that energy and tools that do the same. I carve and dress the candle. I surround it with magical items and objects. I often create like a small display on the altar where my candle is burning to make my intention incredibly clear and to just kind of load it up, load it up with energy. You can think of these things as symbolic or as having innate magical energy. Both true. But in the end, what I have is an expression of my passion and my desire and a plan for making it real. I have also experienced unintentional magic stuff like this, too. I'll get the urge to paint something in particular. You know, I'll just get this image in my head. And it'll get stuck in there. And I get this image of myself, you know, hanging up a painting or something and being inspired by that image. It will nod me. It will completely nod me. I will get obsessed until I grab a canvas and a brush and get to work. Often, I realize afterward that what I painted is something that I either have tried to manifest through magic, or that I wanted to use magic to manifest but didn't quite know how, or hadn't clarified exactly what I wanted or my feelings yet. Hanging that image, that painting on the wall where I can see it every day is a spell. It inspires me. It inspires me to make things happen, to create things, to be the kind of person that I want to be. It creates change in my life. And that's what a spell is. Okay, witches, we are going to return to our episode on magical creativity in just a moment. But first, Courtney Weber from the That Witch Life podcast has come on the show to talk about a special event happening on March 5th that I think you will all be interested in.
Okay, so thank you so much, Courtney, from That Witch Life podcast for coming on the show today. I'm excited to hear a little bit about this mini WitchCon you've got coming up, this mini little convention. I'm so excited about it. Can you kind of tell everybody at home what they can expect from this event?
Yes. So that Witch Life MiniCon is on Saturday, March 5th. It is all virtual, so you can join us from anywhere in the world. And yes, it is being recorded. So if you sign up and you can't come on the day or you can't come for the whole day, you will get recordings to all sessions and you'll have access to them for 30 days afterwards. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So it's me and my two co-hosts, and we are each teaching, short classes. I'm teaching a class on working with deities in magic. So if you're curious about including deities in your magic, but you're not sure where to start, or you've heard a bunch of arbitrary rules that don't make sense, then we're going to talk all about those and break down a lot of superstitions and fallacies, but also discuss some best practices if you want to include deities in your magic. And then Kanani is doing a class on suburban magic, so working magic in the burbs. Yes, exactly. You know, when you have to get your magic supplies at Target because you don't have a Botanica or a good witchcraft store near you, it can be done.
And very then, relatable situation.
Very relatable, you know, right? And then Hillary is teaching a class on her five favorite magical herbs. She has an ongoing segment on our podcast where she talks about best herbs to use in magic. So if you've not heard our show before, That Witch Life, we are three best friends. We've been best friends since high school and a little bit into middle school. And so there's lots of shenanigans and lots of fun and a lot of just a really good time, very inclusive and full of love and full of ridiculousness. And we had you on the show last year and it was really fun. We were like, it's our long lost really sister great. Paige.
Ever since that day, I've been like, you know, man, it's kind of lonely just talking to yourself on a podcast. Like that has just sounded better and better over time. I should get some crazy friends on here.
You should, because then you start trolling each other. I totally trolled Kanani's mom last week because she was mad at me, and Kanani was relaying a message to me from her mom about how she was mad at me. So I got the theme from The Young and the Restless and played it under Kanani telling the story. So. Oh my God. So that's great, but
classic.
So back to the MiniCon, we also have a special masterclass with author Stephanie Rose Burr, the author of 365 Days of Hoodoo, and she is teaching a special class on DNA ancestry magic. So if you got your
awesome idea.
Oh, I know, right?
Super cool idea.
Yeah. So like if you got your 23andMe or your ancestry.com and you're like, wait, what? Who are these people from what country and what, huh? So she's really breaking down how you can tap into that, those roots and that magic. So it's going to be a really, really wonderful time. And we also have a lot of raffle prizes and we have rituals. We've done this really cool thing is we're building a collaborative playlist. So all the participants are sending in songs that make them feel very witchy or powerful. So so I've been collecting all these songs and getting to know our participants, and we have everybody from Lizzo to Stevie Nicks and back again. And
I have to send you a playlist.
It's so good. So we really, really, really hope that people will join us in, like I said, Saturday, March 5th. It is virtual. Join us from anywhere. And if you can't make it on the day, register and you'll get all the recordings to everything. So it's going to be a really, really wonderful time.
Yeah, it is going to be a good time. I'm so excited about it. So everyone, I will be there. I'm super excited.
You're going to be with us. It's going to be great.
I remember when I saw the little banner and it's like special, you know, guest Stephanie Rose Burr. Like I screamed a little bit. I'm like, oh, I love her.
Yes.
She's phenomenal.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Books.
Yes.
I was actually just, talking about stick stones, roots and bones earlier.
Yes.
Like, there's a whole chapter on brooms in that book. You gotta read it. And it's because there's a whole chapter on brooms.
Oh,
and
yes.
It's stuff I never knew about brooms. I didn't know I needed to know about brooms.
Yeah, no, she
I love her books.
Phenomenal. And Stick Stones, Roots and Bones is absolutely essential reading. So yes, come join us. Join us. It will be so fun.
Join us. It is going to be a lot of fun. What is the ticket price that people are going to pay for admission?
Quick question. When does this episode get released?
Okay, so this one will be going out on Friday on the 11th.
Great. Okay, so if you get your tickets before the 15th, it's $55. Awesome. And then if yes, and that early bird price includes a complimentary raffle ticket. We still expect there will be tickets available after the 15th, and you can buy them up until the day on the 5th, but the price does go up to $65, and then you got to buy all your raffle tickets. So we ask people to listen out, because we are hoping to have some scholarship spaces available. We always do a scholarship fund as part of our program to make it available if people are having financial restrictions. And so far people have been very, very generous. So we hope to have, quite a few scholarships. So if the price point is out of your reach right now, just check in with our podcast and we will announce when the scholarships are available, because we would rather have you there than your cash. But, we really hope people can make it. So.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if you could just like do things for free and never take money from anyone?
Yeah. That we just need $20,000 sponsorship. World. Just like give us this money and then we'll have a free conference and we will invite everyone.
See, that's just, it sounds so easy. I wish.
Yes. Simple.
That's right. Awesome. Well, I am really excited about the mini con. This is going to be so much fun. You know, I'm so excited for your talk about deities, actually, because I was just having this problem recently. I wanted to learn more about deity worship, like just kind of in general. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the sources I found were, they were about a specific deity, which is cool, but I cannot read all those books at one time. So I'm excited to just hear like some information that anyone can use, no matter what deity they're actually going to be worshiping.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of people that come into witchcraft or paganism, whatever that, people are following. And they bring in a lot of some fear and restriction brought by this dominant, Judeo-Christian environment. Even if they don't come from those traditions, there still seems to be the sense of, I'm afraid I'm doing something wrong. I don't want to upset the gods. What if I offend them and don't realize it? And there's this sense of reverence that's really purely based in fear. And because people get so worried about it that they're like, I don't know how to do this. And so and then there's also questions that people are finding themselves drawn to deities that come from cultures that they don't live in or aren't from, and they want to approach those deities respectfully. And sometimes they're so worried about doing it quote unquote wrong that they just don't do it at all. And so we are, we want to take that seriously. And yes, of course you want to be respectful. And of course there are things that you want to consider if you are connecting with deities from a different culture, but consideration and avoidance are two very, very different things. Absolutely. And so we want to go in with consideration and care, but avoiding or pushing something away isn't what we want to do either. So and then also talking about like, what are some baby steps you can do if you want to include deities in your practice, but you might be a little nervous?
That's great.
And something that's sustainable. And I will be sharing lots of my my oops stories that I hope people learn from, and giving some practical advice on where you might get started if you want to start opening up your witchcraft practice, something that has a little more deity involvement.
That's cool. I'm super excited about that. I have not worked with deities for most of my practice and recently got really interested in one. So I've been trying to, dip my toes in and stuff. So I'm pretty pumped about that.
Oh, good. I'm just so glad you're going to be with us. It's going to be such a great time.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. I so totally need a fun day too, like a fun witchy day. I really need that. Yeah. On the topic of deity worship, you recently had a book come out all about the goddess Hecate. Like, tell us a little bit about that. How's that going?
It's been received really, really well. People seem very excited by it.
Great reviews.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really impressed with it. So my book is called Hecate, Goddess of Witches. And Hecate is such a complicated, and when I say complicated, it's not because she's hard to understand. It's just that she has so many facets to her, and people get overwhelmed, understandably, and they get scared because they think, oh, well, she's a quote unquote dark goddess. And I don't like those titles, dark goddesses, light goddesses. I don't think they're ever accurate. And I think they tend to just kind of put deities in boxes. And the last thing you should do is put a deity in a box. That's a very bad idea. But Hecate is enjoying such a great popularity right now. And one of the things that she is is historically known for is her connection to witches and witchcraft. So I really explore her as a goddess of witches, and that people who identify as witches, how they can connect with a goddess like Hecate, and what a practice that involves Hecate might look like. And I include some really profound stories from modern practitioners as well as ancient practitioners. We're talking like quotes from people in ancient Greece.
Yeah, about she's an old goddess. She really has been around for a very long time.
Yes, she predates ancient Greece. And we really think that she came out of the Hellenic, maybe the pre-Hellenic times, and came out of, actually the Middle East and Turkey, and not specifically Greece. So she had been around for quite a while before the Greeks started building temples and things to her. So it's really lovely. And so I also include rituals and spells and other devotions and history as well as modern applications, because I don't think that we should try to recreate history. There's a lot of things about the way gods used to be worshipped that we really just don't want to bring back.
Awesome.
No, not great stuff. No, not feeling it. And we don't have to. And at the same time, I also think that to ignore their history is to really sanitize them and to not acknowledge them for who they are. So it's this fine balance between saying, yep, this is how people have historically seen you. This is how they've historically worshipped you. Here's how you're seen now. And here's how you're worshipped now. So
that's fantastic. That's a really good juxtaposition, because I feel like that is often kind of a problem with things about deities. It's like, recreate this ancient Roman ritual. And it's like, oh man, like, where am I going to get this stuff?
Where will I find the children to sacrifice?
Right. Like, I don't think this is what the ritual actually was.
I don't think so. No, I'm going to need to sit a young girl over the fumes of a volcano not going to happen.
As fun as that potentially sounds, not really how I work, right?
I'm not shaming anybody. You do you, with the exception of human sacrifice. We're not into that. But, volcano fumes getting high, go for it. But they're a little hard to come by.
Right, right. Yeah. It's not so accessible to the modern witch all over the place.
Really not.
So that's great, because as a really ancient goddess like that, I think bringing her into our modern lives, I mean, it's important. The gods didn't just exist then. If you are a worshiper, they exist now. So they should have the qualities of now and of witches now as a goddess.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Again, the reviews have been really, really good. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Paige. I really appreciate it.
That's exciting. So before we get going, is there anything else, from that witch life that you guys are looking forward to? Any other events in the future?
Well, we have our fall event, which is So Mote That Con, which is a big 2-day event full of with a very full lineup of speakers and a special keynote. And, plans for that will be forthcoming as the year progresses. Nobody's been booked yet. We have no idea what that's going to be like. And so we're just really focused on getting people to this mini con and building our community. And we release weekly every Monday. We actually just released an episode today, Monday the 7th, with an interview with Terrence P. Ward of Llewellyn Books. And he is talking about witchcraft and depression based on his new book called Empty Cauldron. So
that's on my to read list for this.
Yeah, season. it's really important. It's really good. So this we're on all the podcast platforms, and we have a very active Patreon community. So welcome all kinds of weirdos everywhere. So yeah,
that's awesome, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and to everyone listening, check out that witchlife.com/mini-con if you guys want to check out about the mini con specifically. Track down your tickets, learn more about the event, and I hope to see or meet with many of you guys there, as well as you guys from the show. I'm really excited.
We will see you there.
In the past, I've seen my creative impulses as I think frivolous is the right word. That's not to say that they're bad or entirely useless. And without really knowing what I was doing, I was constantly seeking out opportunities to be creative in my work or at school, because I recognized that I was happier doing that than anything else. I was also more capable of that. You know, this was my talent. If I could be creative, I knew I'd be a little bit better at whatever it is I was doing. But I never realized that the opposite was also true, you know, that a lack of creative opportunities could be completely detrimental for me. I never quite made the connection there. Kind of an embarrassing confession, but I have never held a job for longer than 1 year and 6 months in my entire adult life. Not one time. And yet, it is 2022. I have been hosting this podcast and writing and creating all of this witchy stuff since 2015 without stopping. I thought that being happy in a job was kind of dependent on getting to do creative things. But really, just being able to have the job and to do it in the first place is dependent on me having that creative outlet. And the same is true for witchcraft. I don't know what witchcraft without creativity might be. I can't even think of an example. Because I think everyone and everything has creative energy inside of it, you know? But whatever it might be, I could never do it. I could never. And I've come to realize that when I take big, long breaks from magic or disconnect from my practice, it's because that inspiration was lacking. Again, this seems something kind of frivolous to a lot of people. Inspiration and motivation are separate, right? No. Especially not when you have ADHD, and not for me at all. Ritual is great, right? Following a tried and true method, totally helpful, although that's cool. But I cannot do the exact same thing over and over and over and feel like I am moving forward. At a certain point, I hit a wall, right? It's like, okay, I've got this. I figured it out. This is over. I'm done. What's next? Every candle spell may be, you know, done in pretty much the same way, but the details are never static. I don't think I could actually, you know, I don't think I've ever done the exact same spell twice. Never in my life. I cannot think of one time. I always, you know, switch it up or, you know, my intuition will just be like, hey, let's grab that other thing instead. I also don't think any of these magical correspondences are so black and white. You know, no magical plant has a single use or a single type of energy. No crystal is a one-trick pony. No color expresses a single emotion. No symbol has only one meaning. And that's not just divergent thinking on my part. That's statistics, honestly. Like, there's so many people. And we are all going to see things differently. We are all going to assign different meaning to things. And all of those different meanings are all right. They're all right, even if they're not the same as yours. Yours isn't wrong, neither is theirs. So I have learned to combine not just my creative impulses, but my artistic ones with my witchcraft. Not every creative person is artistic, like I said, but I am an artistic person. That's how I roll. I love art, painting, writing, film, music. Oh man, music. I love music. Dance, interior design, whatever, flower arranging. It's all cool. I love it. I like art, and I like to look at pretty things. I like a lot of colors. My moon is in Libra, so sue me. I'm very comfortable with my love of beauty. So those are the examples that I have to give you coming up. But of course, it wouldn't be creativity if I just gave you all the answers and possibilities. So instead of thinking there's maybe a lack of non-artistic creative pursuits here, just listen to what I do and imagine how you might do it differently. Or imagine how you might apply that idea to whatever area of life in which you are trying to be creative. So writing is huge for me. I am a writer. I write nonfiction and I journal my personal feelings. I don't have much skill for poetry or even writing a cohesive fiction story, unfortunately. I can write lots of little stories that all run together like a damn huge sentence, but one cohesive fiction story? I don't know, man. I just don't know. In my practice, I use writing a lot. I use it to make petition papers so I can, you know, literally include my words, my intentions in my spell. I write out all my tarot card readings because as I write, which is by hand when I'm not working, at work I use the computer. In magic and stuff, it's all by hand. I just get more insights. You know, it's like as I'm forming letters and words, things just start coming to my brain. I start to realize things. I start to make connections. I start to notice the symbols on the cards more. So I write it all down. I like to read and write affirmations, even when I don't use them a lot. I often will just fucking forget an affirmation. If it's written on a piece of paper I can see all the time, I will do it. But if I just have to remember it in my brain, that's not going to work. On that note, I really love writing and creating and designing spells, even ones I don't need or don't use or include ingredients I don't have access to. Aside from the one I don't have any access to, this is my favorite part of writing witch books. You know, I get to stretch my imagination. I get to, you know, imagine how a spell might look when it's finished, what it might do, how it might feel to cast. I explore and I research ingredients and tools and I put them together and I see how they fit. You know, how could you use them? How could you put them together? How do they support each other? Also, what kind of spell makes best use of their magical energy, their power? You know, is this going to be a charm bag or a spell jar or something non-physical, temporary, disposable? I don't know. I do this even when I'm not working on a book. I will just grab my journal and I will start making notes about a spell that's floating around in my mind. Or, you know, a recipe for an incense that I think I'd like to try to create. I guess you could say it's like a creative writing exercise. It's kind of how it feels sometimes. Some of these spells I've used or included in the books, for sure. Others, especially the ones that I can't actually physically do, writing them really was all I needed. The writing of the spell served the purpose. You know, sometimes I don't need to cast a money spell. I just need to design one, and this gives me some inspiration or an avenue for action. It motivates me, and that's how I make things happen. Music. Oh, music's everything, okay, guys? Witchcraft and music, that's me, baby. That's it. I am just three witches with three different musical instruments stacked inside a trench coat. That's, you know, there might be a cat in there, too. I make playlists. I use songs or albums as themes for designing spells. Absolutely, I do. I also do that for my clothes. It's whack, but I love it. I use singing and dancing to raise energy and focus on my intention. I listen to songs that inspire me for spell casting or inspire me specifically with tarot readings. You know, I have certain songs that I have identified as better for different magical situations, even though, you know, it's not like all those songs about for tarot reading or about tarot cards. They just happen to have, you know, an energy that works. I rarely go a single hour in a day without listening to music, and it is almost always in a carefully creative in a carefully, creatively curated playlist. That's just how I roll. Like I said, I like to use clothes. I used to use makeup for magic as well, but I've been doing a lot less makeup the last 2 years. And my clothes have gotten a lot more comfortable. But I still choose clothes and colors that align with things like the planetary ruler of the day, or maybe a particular astrological event, or an energy that I'm trying to cultivate that day, you know? As I write, record this, whatever, it's Wednesday, which is the day ruled by Mercury. Mercury is also still retrograde, though I think when you listen to this, it will have gone direct already. Today I am wearing a light blue pair of pants, Sailor Mercury socks, and a yellow t-shirt. My hair air dried, and it looks like it's been blowing in the wind. The only extra jewelry I put on is a necklace, right, hanging at my throat chakra, right? With a little piece of fluorite hanging from it. You know, it all kind of adds up. I feel like I am vibrating at the same frequency as the universe today, for lack of a better explanation. I almost always wear black when I do any sort of pre-planned spell. And I noticed I also tend to include floral motifs. I didn't realize that until very recently. You know, and I use a lot of magical plants, mainly flowers, in my spells and in my magic. So I'm not shocked, but it also wasn't really a conscious choice. One day I just realized that I was always grabbing the black clothes with a flower on them, or, you know, putting on a like a sweater or a coat or one of those things they call kimonos that aren't actually kimonos that has flowers on it, but it's all black. I was just like, huh, it's like a uniform. I didn't realize I was putting it on every time. Very cool. My altar space, constantly changing display of ideas, colors, magical plants and crystals, candles, artwork. I mean, whatever you name it, there's stuff all over it. And I switch up my altar whenever I need to for a particular vibe, or if I'm doing something live online where people are going to see it behind me, I always tailor it to what it is I'm doing. And sometimes I go over to my altar and I start rearranging and things because I want to get creative. I have, you know, an idea in my mind and I want to build it. I want to make it real. So, you know, it's February as you listen. We're going to get closer to Valentine's Day real soon, and my altar is going to have a lot more red and pink on it all of a sudden. You know, roses will be everywhere. There'll be rose incense and, you know, rose candles and whatever. I'll probably burn more candles, actually, because candles, you know, they have that romantic vibe to them. I will put out oracle decks and tarot decks that I think are romantic-esque. Ones that I like to use for relationship spreads, right? Like the Housewives Tarot, which is very kitschy and fun and really fits a kind of cute, silly, cheesy Valentine's Day vibe, I think. I like to make potions, oil blends, magic powders, herbal mixtures, water, bath salts. I love it all. I like to make things, stuff, with magical intention. Even if it's not something that I need immediately. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not always mixing something up and then using it right away. Sometimes it's like, I feel like creating an oil blend for whatever. Again, let's use money magic again. I feel like creating an oil blend for money magic. I don't need to do any money magic right now, but I've got the idea and it sounds so great. Let's see how it works. I really like to use my hands and I like to mix shit up. I love to get them dirty, you know, put those oils and those herbs and that candle wax and everything right on there. I have lots of craft supplies. I mean, I have too many, but I have a bunch that are specifically for magical crafts that I might do. You know, so I have candle and incense making things. I have sewing supplies that are specifically just for like dream pillows or to make tarot bags that have herbs sewn into the lining, that kind of thing. I really like making plant and crystal elixirs or essences, whatever you like to call them, and moon water. And I'll mix those in with things like paint or clay. If there's no alcohol in it, I can mix it in with whatever, with my makeup. I can spray it in my hair. I can do anything with it. What's really neat about doing stuff with your hands is that this is not just a me thing. It's not just an artistic thing. It's not just an ADHD thing. This is a human thing. It has been proven that for a lot of people, doing things with your hands, getting kind of crafty, this has a remarkably positive effect on your stress levels and your ability to focus just kind of overall. This is all of us. This is something everybody feels. You know, it may not look the same as everyone else. You might find this relief, you know, painting a beautiful picture or rebuilding an engine in your car, cooking for your family, or even changing a dirty diaper, I guess. You know what? Maybe not that one. but I think you get my point. It doesn't have to be artistic to have a positive effect. Now I'm starting to wonder what like the positive emotions you could get from changing a dirty diaper are in it. Come on, Paige, let's move on. Using those creative functions of our brains also helps silence a critical inner voice, and it counters imposter syndrome. It's pretty hard to believe that you're useless and that you can't do anything when you're literally in the act of creating something. It's just a very hard thing to believe. Using these parts of the brain is associated with better self-referential processing, which is a term I did not know. Sounded great, but I didn't know what it meant. What it means is that it strengthens your ability to focus inward, to understand yourself, and, you know, to understand or to create your place in the world. You're better able to take in information from the outside world, apply it to you in your life, and then use it productively in your own way. It's how you foster your sense of identity and how you create a life in line with that identity. That's witchcraft. Come on, man. Magic, especially modern popular witchcraft. Very focused on cultivating self-awareness and gaining control over your environment and your future by understanding what you need and what you want and what you're capable of. It's very reflective, you know, it's a very reflective process. It becomes just a little bit more therapeutic, I feel like, every year. So, you know, for that money magic example, it's not just casting a spell for money. I need money. Money, please. It's not just that. It is instead investigating your own personal feelings and beliefs about money. It's changing your own behavioral patterns. Maybe you're finding a new job or changing industries. You're empowering yourself to make money that you need versus just, you know, going, I need money to materialize from nothing. That is how witchcraft works these days. That's what we understand now. That is also creativity and creation, like actual creation, not just wishing. It's real. This particular fact about creativity is super, super interesting to me. You know, I didn't know that until I just learned it for this episode, right? But in my most recent book, Witchcraft for Emotional Wisdom, which came out in September, there is a spell that I wrote for silencing your inner critic using amber resin, and working with the solar plexus chakra. Just like with our brains, the solar plexus regulates both the feelings of self-worth and self-awareness and our creative impulses. They're tied. Likewise, amber also battles in those two arenas simultaneously. I'm going to read it to you in a minute, and I want you to focus specifically on that voice inside that is critical of your creative potential. So it might say things like, you have no talent, you're not smart, you have no good ideas, you can't draw, so you have no creative abilities, your mind is too logical to be creative, you know, you can't actually create anything worthwhile, expressing your creativity will only drive people away. All real examples, by the way. So those are the kind of critical things that I want you to kind of imagine yourself combating. If you want to grab a piece of amber and actually do this activity right now, you can. But I'm also gonna, you know, link to the spell in the episode description, and I posted it on Twitter. Naturally, I must also say that you should buy the book at the links in the description so you have your own copy of the spell whenever you want it. Okay, so let's soothe our inner critic here. Okay, class, turn to page 71 if you're reading along. So we all have an inner critic, a judgmental voice inside ourselves that reminds us of our fears and our limits. This simple meditation with Sunny Amber helps balance the solar plexus chakra and soothe this fearful voice. So all you need to do this to follow along is a piece of amber and some quiet time. Sit comfortably upright, close your eyes, and take three deep breaths into your belly. Hold your piece of amber at the solar plexus and allow your inner critic to start talking. Let those nasty thoughts come out of the shadows, but don't let them pass your lips. These thoughts and feelings don't belong here in the real world. Instead, counter every negative thing that you hear with something positive, out loud. If it tells you you're ugly, say, I feel beautiful. If it tells you you're stupid, say, I feel capable. If it tells you that you have no talent, say, yes, I do. Amber, its magical power is to transmute and transform energy. So allow it to work as a sort of filter. Visualize the golden amber surrounding the negative thoughts of your inner critic and transmuting them into your own positive statements. This will create balance in the chakra and give you positive affirmations to carry with you as you go forward. Very simple. This is an activity that you can do, I mean, anytime that you need it, right? anytime that you need it. You can, of course, you know, combine this with artistic actions that you're doing. You know, try painting yourself in a positive light. You can write out a list of ideas that you've had in your life and kind of display it. You can recount a story of when you were innovative or saw something that other people couldn't, play a song you wrote, choreograph a dance, whatever. The amber is not just going to help you, you know, see yourself in a positive way, but it's also going to kickstart that creative energy moving through the solar plexus chakra. Anytime that you need this shitty little voice to leave you alone, you can access your own innate creative abilities, which will, again, help you quiet that voice. Interesting that that spell was so legit, and I had no idea. I didn't see that connection, and now I cannot unsee that connection. I mentioned earlier that I have a new book coming out later this year, and then I'd be throwing in little tidbits throughout the episode. Indeed, I have. A lot of them are little secret ones. But I'm also going to tell you a little something specific that fits in with today's topic. The book, which shall remain nameless, has an entire chapter of spells for inspiration and motivation. They all encourage you to work with your hands, you know, get in there with magical colors, plants, crystals, interesting or super weird objects, whatever. There are spells that focus on artistic inspiration and motivation, and others that help you come up with original ideas, shake shit up, get stuff done. One of the spells features this awesome new thing I'm totally obsessed with these days, which is uranium glass. This is an antique collective type of glass, like from the 1920s. It's colored with very tiny amounts of, yes, real uranium, which make it fluoresce under black light. It does not make it dangerous. It's not dangerous to you in any way. And also, that was not the first time people did that. The ancient Romans also used uranium as like a glaze for dishes to give it a color. The uranium makes it fluoresce really cool under black lights, right? Like it glows this really cool kind of acid green. Now, if you don't collect uranium glass, I of course have put in an alternative, but uranium, it's an interesting thing. You don't get to work with a lot in magic, right? And uranium, I mean, it's something that certainly changed the world in bad ways and in good ways. All thanks to the creativity of people like you. Or maybe people like your evil twin, depending on, you know, which use of uranium we're talking about. I also never seen uranium glass in spells before. So I'm very excited about it. I got a little extra creative trying to magically empower your creativity. Hope that's cool. So as we get closer to the release date for this new book, I will share a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. I'm so excited to share it with you. It's going to be very different from my last book. I like to do different things back to back, right? It's going to be a little different from my last book. A little bit more lighthearted. And actually, when I began, you know, I was like, oh man, I don't want to write something like this. You know, my last book was really, it was deep and it was emotional. It's going to help people, you know, deal with depression and face their trauma. And, my boyfriend was like, yeah, that's great, but that was really hard for you to write. He's like, that was a really difficult time. You were really unhappy, you know, it because you had to dredge up a lot of your own stuff. He's like, wouldn't it be nice instead to write something that's a little bit more lighthearted and focuses on some other emotions and areas of life? And boy, do I hate to admit how right he was, but he was so right. He was very right. And writing this book has been really helpful for, I mean, dealing with all the weird stuff that I've been doing, especially. It's given me a great creative outlet that also gives me a break from some of the more difficult and scary things that happen in life. So I'm pretty excited about it. That is all that I have for you today on creativity and magic and ways to be magically creative and vice versa. I hope that this was inspirational for you. And that you, you know, find your own unique ways to get creative in your witchcraft, especially if you feel like you're not a creative person at all. You are. You are a creative person. Everyone can create. Everyone has the ability to bring something into this world, including you. It doesn't have to look like the same creative things that everyone else contributes. In fact, it shouldn't. That would be more creative, wouldn't it? So give yourself a break. Stop holding yourself to some standard that doesn't make sense. Just allow yourself to, you know, kind of sink in to that sunny, fiery, warm, exciting, creative energy. Let it just course through your veins and allow your magic to take the imaginary, the dreamy things that are inside of you, things that you want, things that you think you can't have. Allow that creative energy to just bring them out and attract the kind of things that you want. Make them real. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. It is always my pleasure to be a part of your magical practice and your path of spiritual discovery. If you want to learn more about the Fat Feminist Witch podcast or me, Paige Vanderbeck, you can do that at thefatfeministwitch.com and follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to buy all of my books there on the website or in the description of today's episode. I mentioned witchcraft for emotional wisdom. But if you like the topic of today's episode and want to intentionally combine creativity or artistry with your magic, I also recommend the Grimoire Journal, which guides you to design and create spells, rituals, and recipes that are unique to you. If you want to support the show and gain access to behind-the-scenes extras, early information about upcoming books and episodes, get exclusive podcast merchandise, and even join my book club of shadows, you can find all of that at patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. Just want the cool merch? The ones on Patreon are exclusive there, but I have a Tee Public store where you can find stickers, tote bags, and shirts up to size 5X that feature my logo and some other designs that just come to me. I regularly create little logos and designs in different colors. So much color, oh my god. If you've been listening for a long time, you know I do not have a single logo for this show. I have a million. So I'm hoping that means that there's a little something there for every witch. The link to that store is in the description to this episode, and right now there is a big site-wide sale, so you can get some of these t-shirts and stuff for less than 20 bucks, so check it out. Finally, please follow, subscribe, and share this podcast with your witchy, feminist, and or fat friends to expand my plans for world domination. I'm kidding. Or am I?